Hello, welcome to Across the Pond, a podcast where I speak to people from all around the world. Today I get to speak with Yamil. This dude is really, really cool. I really enjoyed this conversation that we had. He's a big tech guru, so he helps me a little bit with some PC problems I've been having. But then we also get to talk a little bit about his service in the military. And I will say that I personally have never spoken to someone that has served before. And so this was really cool to me, kind of a, I'll say a blessing, because it really helped me to see, you know, how lucky I am to be in the position that I'm in. First, I just want to say this. Thank you, Yamil, for serving. Your service does not go unseen. It does not go unappreciated. So thank you. But this is a good episode. I really did enjoy this one. You know, sometimes when you talk to people and when you're done, you're like, man, that was really good. And it just puts a smile on your face. Yeah, this is one of those conversations. And I hope you can enjoy the conversation that I have with you. Hello?
Yes, yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. Good morning.
Good morning. Here you go. I don't know if you could see me, but here I am.
Yeah. So I don't do video, just so you know.
Okay.
So if you don't want to do that, that's fine. Or if you want to keep it on, it's your choice. But just to let you know, I don't do that.
All right. However you want me to do it, you tell me. I could stop the video.
Well, if it helps you this way, I don't record video. How about that?
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Mine's just audio too, so I'll turn it off for you. But I'm here.
Awesome. Sweet.
Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for doing this. I would say thank you for waking up, except, you know, it's, I think, what, 10 o'clock where you're at? Almost 10 o'clock?
Yep. Just about 10 o'clock. Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not as bad for you as it is for me. Just kidding. I usually have to wake up. No. It's totally okay. I usually have to wake up at like 5 o'clock for work anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm already in that mindset of waking up early. Like, for example, this weekend on Saturday, I'm a big soccer fan. I love soccer so much. And so I support this English team over, of course, in England, Chelsea. And they had a game this past weekend at 4:30 in the morning my time. So you better believe I woke up at 4:30 to watch that game. And oh my gosh.
That's good.
It was a good game. But I say all that to say,
Who were they facing?
Newcastle, I think.
Okay, Newcastle, yeah. My friend's a big Arsenal fan.
Oh, so. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, yeah. But so the only real soccer teams I'll follow is the Arsenal and I also Manchester U. Every now and then I'll catch a Manchester United game. Those are the only two real teams I'll watch as far as soccer.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that you say those two teams just because those two are like, Manchester United, like, they're probably one of the most well-known teams besides, like, Barcelona or, like, Real Madrid, right? Just because they're under certain managers, they've just performed so well. And then same with Arsenal. And so it's just kind of funny you say that because I would love to say you're a bandwagoner, but, you know, you say you just kind of catch it here and there. So that's okay. You know, I have to give it to you. At least you're into the sport more than anything. There's so many people who are like, yeah, I just don't care. You know, I'm more into basketball. And I'm like, well, I understand that, you know, here in the States.
And you can sure call me a bandwagoner because I totally am. I've played soccer, you know what I mean? I've played soccer itself and I enjoy it, but I'm more of a fan of the coaching. So you understand why I would like Arsenal and Man U. I mean, I'm a fan of Messi, of course. I only really know the big names because it's not something I really follow like that.
No, I get that.
But it does. I'll catch a game. You know, I could definitely watch a game.
Yeah. So you said you're like more into the coaching aspect? All right. So
yeah, well, just the concepts that they talk about in coaching and, you know, some of the defensive and offensive strategies, you know, where you're going to put, you know, your corners. Because I had this one soldier super fast and he used to play corner just like that, and it really interested me after that how the gameplay changed because he could just push the pace, you know, if you get the ball to him.
Yeah. So then are you more of like kind of, so this might be a weird jump, are you more of like just an analytical person?
I enjoy analyzing stuff. So yes, for sure. I'm an engineer at heart, you know, like I like building, I like understanding why people do certain things or, you know, it's things like that. You know, I could get kind of off the deep end sometimes, but it's fun.
That's kind of funny you say that because I'm not an engineer. You know, like I don't know if I could ever do that because it involves a lot of math, and math is of the devil. I can't do math, dude. Like, no.
You don't need that much math, man. And I'm a network engineer, but I'm just
Oh.
saying, as far as what you enjoy doing, you know, like
Yeah.
I like creating things with my hands, building
Okay.
stuff like that. You know, that's definitely my passion.
Gotcha. But I agree with you when you say, you know, you like the to see the different coaching techniques and stuff. It's so cool to see how the game, you know, it's freaking soccer's been around for however many years, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, but yet we're still finding new ways to create set plays. You know, we're still finding new ways to just like wow the other team. You know what I mean? Wow the crowd. It's just kind of cool how you have 11 dudes on a field and you're still coming up with ways to do things and you're still coming up with like beautiful plays and stuff. It just boggles my mind.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So you said network engineer and stuff, yeah?
Yes,
So
sir.
like what got you down that path?
What got me down that path, there's a program called PAYS in the military. Back in 2008 when I joined initially, they used to kind of cut a deal with you like, hey, if you join, we will try to get you a job when you get on the outside. So I always wanted to get a job in type of the electric field because I had gone to vocational school. So I in vocational school, pretty much I did a little bit of everything: woodwork, plumbing, HVAC, and then carpentry. So then out of all of those, I chose HVAC because I had a little bit of everything. You know what I mean? I was like, well, I've always been that mindset of jack of all trades and master of none. Like, I always want to learn. That's really my main hobby, learning. That's my biggest hobby.
I'm the same way. You know, that's kind of why I started this podcast is because I like to learn, you know. And here's the
Absolutely.
thing. I hated school. I hated the homework side of school. You know, like 'cause it felt like a lot of busy work, but I loved the lecture side of school, which is kind of funny because a lot of people hated lectures. I loved them because that's how I learn, you know, when someone speaks to me. But that's why I started this podcast is because I wanted to learn people. I wanted to understand, you know, why people think the way they do, why, you know, they might choose to go down a certain path just because of the fact that like that's interesting to me. You know, it's kind of cool to see how, you know, I am, let's just say, you know, I believe in A, but you believe in B, and I just want to know why you believe in B. And that is it. You know, I've learned so much just from doing this. Like for example, yesterday, and I say yesterday because I'm speaking with you the day after, but it might be a couple weeks in terms of release schedule. But I spoke with a woman, and I didn't know what to expect, to be honest with you. And she didn't put this in the, like the form that she filled out, but she went out to say that she was a burlesque dancer, and she like told me all about, you know, that side of it. And I was like, one, I've never knew anything about that. Like I haven't learned anything about that. That's not my area of expertise, if you will. Like I just don't know much about it. But it was kind of interesting just to learn all about that.
Absolutely, man.
And
Absolutely.
what was cool is that it wasn't like a grotesque way. It wasn't something that was like nasty, like, oh yeah, you know, like I just want to straight and do all this stuff. Like it was the professional side of it. You know, and so it was kind of cool to see just how they run things and all of that. And so I say all that,
Structure the processes they use, you know.
And so that's why I started this because I do love learning. It's something that I feel a lot of people don't understand that they're going to learn the rest of their life, you know, regardless of what it is. It might be a new job, or you know, if you get a new computer, or if you want to, you know, make coffee a certain way, like you, even the little things, like you're gonna have to learn how to do it. And so if you say you hate learning, then like what are you doing? You're literally just going to be stuck in your ways. You're not going to want to, you know, get better or be happy or anything because you're just going to be stuck. Like
Yeah,
learn.
I just think our quest for knowledge like really stopped. It stopped a while ago, and we have to kind of teach those ways. We have to show people how they used to be. You know what I mean? Because I think about that all the time. You know, the affinity of, you know, the original natives to the land and what they were thinking and what they wanted to relay to us. What was most important? Their stories. You know, the only written. The only well, auditory or written words that they have. I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And so if you don't mind me asking, what do you feel like is that reason that we have lost that thirst for knowledge? Do you feel like there's one or two things that really that we can like accredit to people kind of just being complacent?
Yeah, I think two things. The sense of community, I think, is a big one. But like, I think we've lost a sense of community with the digital era. And I know we have to evolve, and I'm part of the reason, and we're all part of the reason that it needs to, right? Because we want these things, and we're at a point where we can do things at a drop of a dime, and we should be able to use that for good. I think that's what everybody wants at the end of the day, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, let's do this for good.
Yeah.
But that's one thing. The second part is community, because I think without each other, we've lost a lot of our ways, you know, our traditional ways of farming and how we take care of the land and take care of us. And I think a lot of people are going to that, which is kind of weird with this whole minimal and, you know, tiny house movement and all these other things that are going on. But it's interesting to see at the bigger picture. It's like people are starting to realize that what's really matters is the people to the left and right of you, but they don't know how to associate a community because we still have to social distance and kind of a weird era. But that's kind of why I started getting into podcasting, is to open myself up and be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Not only be vulnerable, but to allow myself to grow through a community, because if we can't help each other, where are we going to be in the next 10 years? You know, what have we done, you know?
Yeah.
So,
oh my goodness.
Can't undo it.
Yeah. Like it when you said that, it almost like kind of made me nervous, because I believe that you're so right because of how people are evolving. You know, it's with the whole idea, especially with this recent political, you know, movement or whatever you want to call it.
Catastrophe.
Yeah, catastrophe. That's probably a better word. And like the thing is that if you step back and you look at it, you know, we had one side and we had the other side, right? And of course, like one thing I try and do, stay away from politics on this, but I'm just kind of using it as an example, mm-hmm. because it is very relevant. So you have both sides, right? And there's mm-hmm. so much hatred and discord and just, I'll say violence, you know, if you will, between these two sides, that lack of communication and that lack of, there's no desire to resolve anything. It almost sounds like it's just two sides hating each other because they don't share the same views. And
that's how it always has been for a long time.
Yeah. And with the giant divide that we have, I just don't see there ever being this sort of community that you're describing. I don't see there ever being,
right,
excuse me, this sort of, you know, coming together to try and, you know, learn the right way to do it. Because, and I say this all the time, mm-hmm. I love disagreements and I love good arguments, because what happens is the two come together, you know, they fight, they try and debate what the right thing is. And it's only through that can we really, truly, in my opinion, find the right path to go down. Because if you just have one side that says, oh, again, I don't want to get into politics, but I feel like this is the best way to describe it. You know, we have the radical lefts who are like, we want, you know, socialist healthcare. We want, you know, pretty much like a form of socialism to come in, right? And then you have the rights who are like, no, we don't want any of that. But if they butt heads and they really come together, rather than just fighting and saying, you're stupid, no, blah, blah, blah. If they really come together and they sit down and they're able to figure out the correct way to go, I feel like if they can debate in a civilized way, they will be able to figure out the right path. But we don't see that. We lack that sense of community. And it just,
right. I really think, yeah, like I said, I think it derives from one thing, is maybe religion and culture. So, because to me, Americans have a big identity issue.
Yeah.
They want to be this, they want to be that. They want to separate, or maybe they have a certain political view, or maybe their parents swayed them to have a political view. Maybe they were part of the system that created their political view.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot you can go into there. And I think the biggest thing, the takeaway, is like, we really separated God from culture, and specifically in the States, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you ask an American, you know, what do you identify as? He's like, oh, no, you know, I did my ancestry. I'm 23% Irish, and I really associate with being Irish, so I am Irish, mm-hmm. right? And that's perfect. It's fine. Go ahead and do that. That's everybody's, you know, God-given right to feel however you want to feel and whatever makes you happy. Mm-hmm. I just think that We need to analyze what they were doing back in the days, why religion was such a part of the community. It was like a cycle, a system. They used each other, but like we don't use our farmers, right? And nobody wants to farm anymore because everybody wants to be in the digital era. But there's a big need for farmers right now, and then the systems we create for them are not ideal. You know what I mean? So how do we fix that? There's a lot. So I think it all starts with community. If we can work together with one thing, if we can do one thing together, and I think maybe schooling would be the easiest because we are already there, and you kind of see that. But I don't know. It's just been a different year with COVID, and now parents having to spend more time with their kids and actually educating them is a different aspect. What do you think?
I think you're right. Because what I
I don't want to
see,
be right.
no, well, I mean, here's the thing. I think that you were correct in assuming that we need a stronger community, because the thing is that we might see people who are, in the same community, but they're not in the same community. They just live next to each other, or they might just be associated with, A, but they're not, A, they're B. And so with that idea of, coming together as a community, that's where, people need to put aside their differences. Like, here's the thing. Let's just say this. Let's just say that I believe, that, man, I need to try and pick a topic that's not super controversial. Let's just say that I believe that all trees should be burned down. And I know this is stupid, but hear me out. I believe that all trees should be burned down because trees are pointless or whatever it is. But you believe that we need trees to survive, which of course is the right way because trees produce oxygen, right? But let's just say I was really stupid and I believe that they need to all be burned down. But we are in the same community. I would hope that you and I would be able to get along because, we might agree on so many other things, but this one thing that we don't agree on, that's okay, But in today's culture, that one thing will literally drive people apart because whatever reason, it could be, oh, like, I don't see why you don't agree with me. If you can't have a point, then I'm right. And if I'm right, then you're wrong. Like it's really unfortunate to see that because that's what's driving apart people. Because the reason that we are human is because, or I hold on, let me rephrase that. That came out wrong. We have an opinion, and that's what makes us human. Having a difference of opinion makes us humans. Because if we all agreed on the same exact thing 100% of the time, we would pretty much be autonomous. We would just be robots. Then what's the point of living, But if we had differences of opinions and we are able to get along, and then we can bond that community, like, depending on what your belief is in terms of like religion or not really, whatever it is, I believe that one of the greatest things that we can do as a human is to love one another. I believe that loving one another is pretty much the core of who we are. And if we can't love other people, regardless of what their opinion is, regardless of what they want to do, regardless of whatever it is, if we can't just love other people, especially when it comes to color of their skin or ethnicity or something that's even on the outside rather than on the inside, then like we're already losing, we're fighting a losing battle because we're not going to be able to advance. We're not going to be able to do good.
I think we have to believe and hope that we can do it. And if we don't start the change within ourselves to reach out to the community and do the things that we need to do, be part of it, we have to give. You have to be selfless. Everybody has a role. You know what I mean? Everybody has a role in this world, and we're all little cogs in a wheel, right? And I think it's important that we try to go back to that. It's a semblance of what was, and we can do that as creators of content. You can do that as artists. You can do it as however you feel. And I just think that instead of being trying to separate ourselves as an individual, and we have to think about the greater good. We have to. I think that's what's important. You got to have hope. I mean, we have hope. Why are we doing anything? Why are we, moving forward? Why do we continue to learn? I mean, we've made so many advances, and we've gotten so far. And it's something so simple as working together has become disjointed.
Yeah.
It's difficult, man. It's
Yeah.
difficult.
I wonder though if it's almost the whole idea of the just like being an American and being independent and the American dream and wanting to try to make as much money as possible, and then that consumes you, and then you don't care about, John next to you or Bill next to you. You just want to make as much money as possible to be the best that you can be. I wonder if that whole mentality and just that toxic idea of, narcissism and money and stuff has seeped into at least Americans and has driven us apart in that way.
But it's our DNA now, you know what I mean? It is like it really is. There's a part of social media and everything that comes with it that it can be very addictive. You can go off the deep end real quick. And the thing is that I think a lot of people have a problem with addiction nowadays. They don't want, may not want to admit it, but it's a big problem we also have, because our society is okay with drinking beer on the weekends, but beer is still a drug for what it's sense. And honestly, to me, beer is like, not necessarily beer, I'm a beer lover and I love alcohol. I can drink it quite often. But I think that if you don't know, if they don't we don't educate people on how to consume alcohol, how to act, then that's a problem.
Yeah. And I mean you really hit, I think, the nail on the head there, in terms of just like there's so many things that are out there that would be considered at least loosely a drug, I do believe that alcohol is one of them, just because you can see what alcohol can do, just because, like I have no problem with it. I do like, Stella Artois, like stuff like that. Like I enjoy a nice
Yeah.
beer from time to time, but at
Gotta
this,
have my blue moon. That's my thing.
oh, I still have yet to try that. I'm very uncultured in the whole alcohol industry, but, I say all that to say that there are so many things nowadays that people just kind of take for granted, if you will, or they don't really give it a second thought, that if they do it too much becomes like the hardest drug ever. Like it can be so hard to get weaned off. For example, social media. Social media is a huge, huge drug that people just take for granted. Oh, yeah, I'm just gonna go on Twitter for 5 minutes. But next thing you know, it's been 2 hours. TikTok, amazing example of that. Like even in my own life, like there have been some times like when I first found out about TikTok, I'd be on it for, and next thing I know, an hour and a half went by and I was like, wait, what? Like I could have swore it was 10 minutes. Pornography is a huge, huge thing that a lot of people become just life enslaved, addicted to. What else is there? Prescription drugs.
Yeah, but like I said, to me, the biggest thing is that we always try to categorize it.
That's true.
Addiction at the key root of it is the addiction. Why do Americans tend to have an addictive personality? Right? That's what I think it, like, to me, it's just because we're imprinted that way with computers, with ads. I mean, that's what we visually see all day. It's what we're it has an effect on everyone in different ways. And I think that we just need to learn it with moderation. And I think the key takeaway from addiction that I would say is just, it's difficult. And I think we can't get through those moments if we keep separating from each other, if that makes sense. That's why I keep going back to that whole community thing. Community is very important, more important than what I've thought in the past.
And I feel like community is incredibly evident, or I should say this, we need community, and that's becoming more and more evident the longer we're in this whole COVID state, like the longer we stay in quarantine, the more we realize that we need community, which is kind of funny, especially coming from me because I'm so independent. I love being by myself. I love, for example, sitting on my computer and just kind of being isolated from the world for hours on end.
This is an amazing time for creators. It
Oh yeah,
really is.
amazing
Amazing
time.
time.
But sitting here and being here all the time, like my wife will be like, hey, like let's go do something, because she needs community so much. Like not, and of course there's nothing wrong with that, but she needs that communal aspect. She needs to be in communion with other people. But for me, it's like, I don't feel like I need that as much. But the longer I've been in quarantine, the more I realize, yeah, I do need that. You know, I become so stuck in my ways. I'm starting to realize, you know, like I might do this at this time, whatever it is. I'm starting to realize that I need someone to kind of sharpen me, if you will, you know, kind of, you know, brush over the rough edges of my life and start and to help me realize that, oh, shoot, you know, like maybe I'm wrong in these areas, you know? And
no, as iron sharpens iron, the closer you get to the group that, the closer you get to the group of what you ideally want to do, the more you will learn and the more you will grow in that field.
Yes,
sir. It's like birds of a feather flock together, right? Yep. They tell you, they also tell you what's the other one? Tell me your closest five friends and I'll tell you where you'll be in 5 years.
Oh, true. 100%.
It's another one.
Yep.
So it's like I said, it's been interesting. It's been interesting because I think this time for the people who can focus and or have hit rock bottom, you know, because I think that's what a lot of people are experiencing through this whole pandemic, so to say, is that maybe some people are really hitting rock bottom and starting to realize, hey, there's a lot of stuff I need to work on, because you're spending so much time alone, so much time with maybe your you know, your kids and your family, and it's like, man, what am I gonna do here? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a perfect example. I really struggled. I had a huge mental breakdown during this whole thing when my wife actually got COVID during that time. And both, thankfully, me and my daughter didn't come out with it. This was probably about 5 or 6 months now. And that really just, it was a wake-up call for me. Like, I kind of needed it. And not only did I need it, but I think it was also important to share, you know, to share that information. And it was tough during that time because we were trying to do as best we could to stay away from everyone. And it kind of got a little dark there, because I'm a social bird. Mm-hmm. I'm a social bird. My wife is not. She's kind of an introvert. So that's where we kind of differ. But it was that low really helped me focus and see the things that I needed to work on. And that's what I just geared my energy towards, instead of worrying about, you know, whether Biden is here or not, and whether, you know, whatever political aspect or whatever is worrying you at that moment, you know, because I think people also haven't really stopped to think about that. We are still losing people. And I know a couple of people that have lost 3 or 4 family members in one family. Like, it's been tough for people this year. And we gotta reach out to those who you really care about. You're starting to see people's kind of true colors, and I'm grateful for it, because it's kind of an exposure. It's an exposure now, because either you're doing or you're not.
Yeah. Nah, that it's true. It's true. I want to kind of change gears just a little bit.
Sure.
No disrespect in that form, but I'm kind of curious about this. And I didn't know this at the time, but you said that you were in the military?
Yeah. I spent about 8 years in the military. Yeah.
Wow.
8 years.
So what kind of made you decide to go into that? I think you mentioned that earlier, but in case if there's maybe something else, but like, what kind of made you go into it? And then like, what branch of the military, and maybe what kind of got you out of it?
Yeah. Okay. So I initially got in 2008. This was shortly after 9/11. So I was in New York City during 9/11.
Oh, wow.
When that happened, it was pretty intense. I still remember that day. When that happened, that was one of the culminating events. So I ended up leaving. Actually, I lived in Delaware for a bit.
Okay.
I worked as a flooring contractor, kind of lived life a little bit, experience, came back to New York City, and I gave myself a year. I was like, if I can't get out of the hole I'm in a year, I am going to join the military. And I set my clock for January 1st. And I went on the 2nd, because the 1st, the recruiting station was closed. And I was already in basic training by the 8th.
Wow.
So it literally took me a week and I was in. So that was my decision. And that's why partially I joined, not only to serve because of what I experienced during 9/11, but also to just serve the country. I mean, my grandfather also served. So, It was something that we did. Spent a lot of I kind of pinged around. Was in Fort Jerome for about 4 years. Yeah, roughly 4 years, and then that's upstate New York, right back Canada. Very cold up there. And then I traveled to Korea. Then I came back. Then I went to Afghanistan. Then I came back and went to Korea again. Then I ended up in Texas, in Fort Hood. And there, that's when I ended up getting out. What made me get out was my failure of selection. Do you know what selection is at all?
I can guess, but I have a feeling that that would be wrong, so I'm going to say no.
It's just special forces selection, so you have to go through a process to just to you know become a special forces soldier. So I actually went through selection and failed out. I did not make it. So that was one of the big culminating events of my life. That was probably one of the where I felt the lowest because I gave everything I could physically, but I did not give everything I could mentally. And that's the reason why I think I failed. And it's because I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready mentally. And I'm glad it didn't happen in a way, because imagine if I was in a unit or a team and I caused someone else to pass away because I'm not sharp. You know what I mean? So it's important to understand that. And that was a big kick in my rear, but it's what really made me wake up to the reality that I need to sit in and do what I want to do and love it, enjoy it.
And that's I do want to say this first. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for still living here.
Yeah, of course. I mean, here's the thing. And I've said this to my wife. It's like I love America. I do, and I'm very grateful for everyone who sacrificed, you know. But at the same time, you know, like you kind of got to be ready to, you know, just in case if something was to happen. Because like with the recent political thing that happened, bro, I was like, you know, babe, like just keep your mind open. We might have to cross borders and go to Canada, you know, if things were to get really, really bad, just because of how. And I don't even necessarily mean politically, but it's just like there is so much crap that was going on. I was just scared, you know, because I live in Seattle, and so I was scared that like something was legitimately going to happen. Like, let's say Trump won, bro. I bet buildings would be on fire right now in Seattle. You know, like I was just scared, and so that's why I say that. But I do want to say, you know, thank you for your service. It's very humbling, and I really enjoy being able to speak with someone who has served because, I never get that option to do it a lot, you know? And to be honest, I take for granted the fact that I can sit here and do this podcast, or I can sit here and play video games, or, you know, watch movies with my wife and not have to worry about anything because, you know, there's people in the military who are there, you know, working hard to protect us. So, you know, I'm very grateful for all that. So again, thank you. I do appreciate your service.
I appreciate that, man. I'm sure every other veteran, and I'm speaking for probably every other veteran, is like we appreciate the comments and the candor. You know what I mean? And I really think we're in a point where we've been compare us to, you know, maybe 30 or 40 years ago and kind of what was going on during that time. It's night and day. I'm glad that, you know, the reason that we are getting this attention, I think, during our era is because of those before us in Nam. You know what I mean? And the horrors that they faced, and the same thing with them. They faced the same horrors that the soldiers from World War II did, and so on and so on. Because I seen the, you know what I mean? Seen it plenty, man. Anyways, continue.
And so I'm kind of curious because, and if there's anything else you would like to say about any of your military experience, you know, just go ahead and blurt out whenever. Because I'm just not sure how much to ask because I don't want to be disrespectful. But I really like travel. I love traveling, and I feel that traveling is something that really can help mold a person because you get to get out of the bubble that you're in and you get to experience a different culture. So you said that you traveled a lot. You know, you traveled to Korea a couple times. You know, like how, and of course this was under military, I don't want to say restriction, but that word is, it's lost in my mind. But you were under like, you know, the military idea going, you know, with military. But how was that? that bit going to and from Korea a couple times. Like, were you there for, you know, just to kind of be there? Like, what was the whole thing? And then maybe what did you learn while in Korea?
Oh, I learned a ton, man. I learned a ton while I was in Korea. But it was my first duty station coming right out of what you call AIT. Mm-hmm. AIT is just advanced individual training, which is specific to your job. So if you're a medic, you'll go to medic school during that time. If you are a signal guy like I was, you go to signal school. Mm-hmm. Pretty much when you... lost my train of thought there. I was going somewhere.
You're all good.
We were just talking about, can you refresh me real
yeah,
quick?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like I said, I love traveling and I feel like traveling can help mold someone, right? And so going to Korea, like if you can share, like maybe, you know, what did you do there for the military? And then like maybe what did you learn? You know, like what were some of the experiences that you feel like helped shape you as a person being in Korea?
Okay, so I got there in 2008, so it's a very different Korea, which was really good for me to go two times. So the fact that I went in 2008 and then I went again in 2013, I was able to actually see Korea grow, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Right? So some of the areas when I first went to down to Dongdaejeong, which is one of the most forward base by Camp Castle-ish area, which is KC is one of the biggest bases there. Camp Castle is closed now, but that's where I was. Anyways, in Korea, there's so much about the culture that I loved. I had quite a little bit of affinity to some Japanese anime because I did like some anime and I did watch a lot of cartoons, play a lot of video games. Mm-hmm. I was a skateboarder when I was younger, so I kind of dabbled in a little bit of everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And I definitely say that there's so many things about the Korean culture that I loved. I really do like Korea. My time over there was amazing both times. My 2013 was actually a rough year in Korea because I was in the medevac. So that changed my perspective a little bit because I was dealing with people who were literally being injured every day. Mm. So that was a little bit different. So that was an intense time for me in my service. And I think that was... probably one of the roughest assignments I had, even although I was deployed in Afghanistan as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So real quick, and again, I mean, no disrespect if these questions that I ask about your military history come off as rude, just because I'm not too sure what I should or shouldn't ask.
Yep, you're fine.
But so when you're in Korea, did you guys have any sort of something to do with the North Korean influence at all in terms of defense or anything?
So absolutely. So during the time that I went there in 08, they're at a standstill. Okay, so North Korea and South Korea are technically still at war. It's just an armistice agreement. It's just a piece of paper that's stating, hey, we are not going to, you know, inflict as long as you don't provoke us, you know, and that's with the DMZ. So they literally have one side of the DMZ with North Korea and the south end of the DMZ. And for those who don't know what the DMZ is, it's the demilitarized zone. It's just a big word to describe that area. The thing is that there's still an active threat there, and you have to understand that. And yes, during our time there in 08, we did have a scare, a chemical kind of scare that went up. It would what we call, you know, our force con level went up, meaning, you know, bases got kind of locked down and kind of, you know, peeled back just in case something went down. So there was some threat there. It's just not evident because it's not an active war, you know, it's just an agreement. But the minute that all changed, that's what we're there for. And we're there to support any type of action that South Korea needs to defend itself.
Okay. Yeah, I just wasn't sure if the United States military was very involved in that. I thought it was just, you know, Korea's trying to duke it out, if you will.
No, so Korea, like many other countries, also has what we call a KATUSA program, which is called a Korean augmentee to the U.S. Army. So they're pretty much national Korean kids who have to serve in the military. So they have a choice, you know, and depending on that exam, they take an exam. They either choose to be in the police force or what they call the ROK, the Republic of Korea Army, or a Katusa. And Katusa is the higher of the two because you get to work hand in hand with American soldiers. You'll wear our uniform. They're just like us. There's no different. They just have to spend their time in the Rock Army and then spend their time with the Americans. And then they go back and they complete their time. Then they can get out or continue in the Rock if that's what they want to decide to do. Most of them opt out of it because a lot of them have very, very good educations. A lot of the that's another misconception. A lot of the Katusas that we get, I mean, they're coming from Yale, Stanford, and Harvard. And you're like, wow. I was like, these guys have a better education than me. And they're being augmented in the military and they're forced to have federal service on them. They all have to serve, whether it be as a police or as a soldier, but they all, almost every single male over there serves, and females as well.
Wow. Do you feel like that that's something that's good, making their students and stuff work in the military? Or do you feel like that's something that's maybe a little too much?
I think the way they use them is good, because you got to understand they're actually literally defending their country.
True.
And I think that's where it's a little bit different, because we don't have an active threat on U.S. territories or the U.S. borders. We don't have that. But if it was to happen, I really think it would be a good thing, because most kids coming nowadays are kind of lost, right? They'll come out, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to go to college, or go to college and change their major 15 times.
Yeah.
Or and not that that's a bad thing. I mean, some people are very successful doing that, but some people just need to work, some people are just built to work. And I think that if you got it out of the way early, because that's another thing, Koreans also, to us, they are a year younger. So if they say, hey, I am 20, they're actually 19 in American American years, because they don't count their birth year as zero. Their birth years as one. So
That's so interesting.
There's so much about Korea that I love, man. And as a whole, it's a beautiful country. They have so much to experience. Soyasan and Itaewon, and going down to Seoul. The club life is like no other over there. It's interesting, man. It's an interesting place. If you ever get a chance to go, I would highly suggest it. Yeah. Get yourself some yakimandu. It's delicious.
Yakimandu. I'll have to keep that in mind.
Fried dumplings.
Fried dumplings, dude. Oh, okay. You said yakimandu. It reminded me of this one thing that I had. I was in Okinawa for a little bit. Working with some of the military kids there for a project for school. And I went to I met some of the people that were serving over there, and super chill guys. And I was like, hey, what's something that's really cool that we can go do, that I won't be able to experience anywhere else? And they're like, oh, we should go get yakiniku, which is just like it's one of those things. I'm not sure if it's super popular over here in the States, but it's like one of those grills that are in the middle of the table, and they just bring you out a ton of meats. Absolutely. And all this. Gosh, it was so good.
Yeah, that's the same thing. So Korea does the same thing. They grill right in front of you.
Yeah.
And they also have a lot of different kimchi. So they'll have a lot of little side dishes, and you could kind of just put everything together, bean sprouts, red pepper paste. That's my favorite.
Oh, it was so spicy. Good. So with and of course, like I said earlier, if you don't want to talk about this, that's okay. But with Afghanistan, would you be able to just kind of say maybe what you did out there, and of course whatever you're comfortable speaking on, because I understand that can be a very touchy subject. But if you're comfortable, maybe what can you tell us?
I will tell you. It was just like any other place, a country that's kind of ripped apart at the seams from what we would look at it. Most Americans would go over there and prejudge it because it's a third world country and because they struggle in their society. The one thing that they do have is that I would say that they don't have a sense of national pride. In a way, in my opinion, how we are very proud, if you ask, a local, whether they associate themselves, or just love Afghanistan, they'll be like, no, I'm a Shia, a Sunni, they kind of, they identify themselves by religion. and their views and aspects. So it's a different world. Because like I said, most Americans don't are not exposed to that every day. As a whole, my experience with most of the locals was pretty positive. There's, I had a lot of pity for the kids, because you'll see kids, running around, and I mean, they would run around with wheelbarrows. This is one of the things that I'll share. They would run around with wheelbarrows, usually in the morning, and they would go to these areas where there was just, tons of trash and stuff, and just start picking stuff up, stuff that you may think is trash, and they reuse, they repurpose everything. They'll rebuild batteries from scrap. They'll build you a whole engine overnight. You're talking about kids that are 7, 8 years old already doing mechanic work. So it's a different aspect. It's like the trades are very important, because that's they live on a barter system. There's no, real currency for them. I mean, they have a currency, but they're more barter than anything. Like, hey, I'll give you oil if you give me some water, or hey, but it was a tough experience. I was over in CAF in Kandahar, which is an airstrip, pretty much. Literally, it's in the middle of huge mountain ranges over in Afghanistan. A lot of the misconceptions of Afghanistan also is that it's very hot. The winter there is very weird. It's muddy, it's cold, and it snows a lot. So it's interesting. It's a different part of desert. The night sky is absolutely beautiful. Probably one of my fondest memories looking at the sky in Afghanistan. And that's one of those things that you go. And of course, we experienced a lot of other things. We all go with the flow and how we deal with it individually.
Yeah, gotcha. All right. Well, thanks for sharing. It's interesting to me how the like you said, you have these kids who have wheelbarrows that will collect stuff, and then build something out of it, and that's like their job. But yet we have kids who of the same age here in the States who sit on their butt and play video games all day. And it's just it really helps you to take a step back to realize what life is all about. And to realize how amazing we might have it over here in more developed countries, and it's just powerful stuff to sit and kind of ponder on and to meditate on.
Yeah, man. I think the biggest takeaway is that you have to understand that they may not necessarily have what we have, but they have a lot of other things, and they experience a lot more than that. I mean, not only trafficking, but it gets deep, and then that's why a lot of people don't want to talk about it, because it gets kind of dark, and but I would say it's just we have to be open-minded. We have to be open-minded enough to learn about it and educate yourself on why. Like you were talking to earlier, I wouldn't say that we have a big hate culture in the American society. We tend to hate things right off the bat. I think we just lose the affinity of words lately. We're choosing our words very bad. And that's part of education, and I think that's part of also, just trying to learn and understand why things are, and not just prejudge them.
It's powerful stuff to kind of sit on and hopefully ponder on, because it's just a weird world that we live in. Kind of moving gears a little bit. I'm curious. What made you want to go into like kind of like this business administration cybersecurity thing?
Okay, so this is one of those things where it's hilarious to me. So I am one of those guys that have been chasing my BA for like 6 years. So it's like I went to school for a long time, and I've been through a lot of schooling while I was in the military. I had over like 13 different certifications. I've taken my A plus, SEC plus,
Jeez.
and it's just like it gets annoying and repetitive. And then at the end of the year, when you're getting charged $500 to recertify by Cisco, it's kind of kind of not cool.
Yeah.
So it's like, do I really need this piece of paper, or can I just do my job without it? Like, I already have the experience, but hey, that paper is important. So that's how I feel about that system. But a business administration is what I wanted to. I've always wanted to establish a business. I've always had that entrepreneur mindset. And then I got into cybersecurity because I'm an IT guy. I build computers like crazy.
Nice.
I'm a big so you got any PC questions, I'm your guy, man. You just ask me. I got you. And then I've worked everything from the desktop administrative work all the way up to knowledge management, which is kind of like SharePoint substructures and subsites and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, I got a lot of info in this brain of mine. It's time to dump it. Yeah, I'm trying to share.
Yeah. So what would you say would be some of the, and this might be a very generalized, just dumb question, but hear me out, you know, because of the whole cybersecurity thing, what would you say would be one of the more biggest, like, faults, if that's the right terminology, or one of the biggest entryways that people can be hacked, if you will, or here's a better way, like, how are we able to more securely be on the internet?
So I think the biggest takeaway, I think the most important thing to understand is how a router and switch functions and how to establish a VPN. I think those would be the two takeaways there. Because if you have a good VPN, like a paid service like a Bear Tunnel or something like that, securing your connection to the internet is way more important than, to me, securing the data that you may have on a device, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends. It just depends on where you want to implement your security. Mm-hmm. But I would say most people don't even know what a VPN is, a virtual private network, and how to get on a secured tunnel. Mm-hmm. Because at least that kind of spoofs your IP and allows you to geographically be found somewhere else, because you're also sticking it to the man because you're killing their data. So it's a good way to think about it.
So what are, like, some of the more, and I could be wrong in assuming this, but what are some of the more, like, bigger breaches that you've had to deal with, if you can share, if you've dealt with any?
Yeah, for sure. I've dealt with some breaches in my life. it just depends. There's obviously a breach I cannot speak about.
Yeah, of course.
but I do. Let me see. So, what's the most important takeaway of a breach, or a story of a breach that I could share? I think the biggest takeaway about any breach is usually human error, 90% of the time. And it's simple as knowing what classification of equipment that you're connecting and what type of network you're connecting to. Also, not just connecting to any network, mm-hmm. or having some type of common knowledge of, you know, I'm going to put my device away, but I'm also going to turn off its features, because you can easily turn off Wi-Fi, turn off your Bluetooth capability, remove a battery. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things you can do. So,
Okay. And then, this might be a little more out of your realm, and again, I'm sorry, I just don't know your full expertise on it, but how important is it, or maybe not important, but how often do we see, you know, like, companies, like, stealing data and stuff without us even knowing?
Well, it's not necessarily stealing data. We've freely pretty much given it away.
Okay.
At this point. Okay. At this point, we're just giving it away.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So let's be clear there. They're not doing anything that illegal that you ain't already posting on TikTok.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's really understanding why data is important. Understanding big data. If you look at where are the trends in tech are going, it's insane. Think about it, back a couple of years, you know, when we first started probably playing video games on small Game Boys, and where we've gotten now with computers, with multi-threading and its capabilities, and the actual network that we have as well. Because I work on cell tower backhaul, so okay. I am the guy that gets yelled at if any specific vendor, whether it be Verizon, T-Mobile, those are my customers. They will request we check bandwidth on a tower, or if a hurricane comes through and rips the thing apart, I'm the guy that's going to get the alarms to actually go, okay, we need to go send a group to start fixing these cables or
Okay.
replacing equipment, cards, all that.
Gotcha. So it sounds like a fun job.
It's tough. It could get tough.
I would
Get
hate to
tough.
be the guy that would get yelled at because something isn't going down.
Yeah, it's tough, man. That's the bad part of it, is because they kind of take the human factor out of it. It's like, I lost 1% of my bandwidth. I need everything now. But it's their right. You know what I mean? It's how we built our corporations, and it is the process that we established. So we gotta abide by it, and we'll continue to do good work. So I'm not worried about it.
And then this is just a question that I'm curious about. If you had to build a brand new computer right here, right now, and you had an unlimited amount of money, what would the components be?
It would have to be, I'm gonna go with the Ryzen build.
Oh,
I'm
good,
gonna
good,
go with
good.
the 6800. I'm
Okay,
gonna go
yeah.
with the 6800 XT, just got released, I believe. Because I was watching some news on its testing and how the heat's holding up. Definitely gonna get I think they're already at 5 or 650s by now, because the last series of motherboards were like 550s, so I would say they're at like 650s by now or something like that. But yeah, and then 32 gigs of RAM at a minimum. Definitely gonna get a solid state M.2. Definitely gonna get 120, maybe even like a 240 hard, and maybe 2 terabyte hard drive in there. So it'd be good little build. Those 750 watt power supply, that's real
Ooh,
quick.
buddy. Yeah. So I'm somewhat knowledgeable with computers. Like I understood what you said, and like, I can build a PC and everything, it's just like a fun puzzle. But the one thing that I've never understood is some people swear by having more RAM, like 32 gigs, but other people say that you only need really about 16. With the way that games and stuff are going and the way that, pretty much almost anything you do in terms of or besides browsing the internet, like content creation or playing games or whatever it is, like it seems like you need more RAM nowadays. Would you say that it's better to have more than 16, or would you say that 16 for the average person is more than enough?
Okay, so I'm gonna split this into two parts. So the first part, I would say that honestly, nowadays with the AAA titles that we have and with ray tracing and everybody wanting to get these bulky cards, 32 gigs. Okay, 16 used to be a thing, but 32 is becoming now the new facto standard. But the two things that people need to understand when they're using a computer or buying a computer is understanding the CPU that they have is way more important than understanding what RAM, how much RAM you have. They associate RAM with speed. They don't understand why. RAM has a speed, and all those speeds are different, right? Because you may have 16 gigs of RAM at 2600 megahertz is not faster than RAM at 3000 megahertz. So that's how you buy your RAM. That's how you separate, okay, I don't want this because it's not fast enough as far as speed. Not don't care about, the if at a bare minimum, a budget system should have at least a 16 gigs nowadays. And then as far as the CPU is concerned, understanding the difference between the Intel and AMD platform, okay, that's key. Number two, understanding what multi-core threading is, meaning every processor, every CPU has a different amount of cores and threads. And the more cores and threads, the more processing power it has. So that means it's better at multitasking. It's going to be better at streaming. It's going to be better at audio editing or video editing because it has more accessible, if that makes sense. So if you have a 4-core, 8-thread CPU, is not going to be better than an 8-core, 16-thread CPU. So that's important to know. I think that's what people just go, oh, yeah, I want more RAM because it makes it faster. But they have a 4-core CPU they could easily upgrade for maybe like 40 or 30 bucks. So.
So to kind of just reiterate to make sure that I understood you correctly, you need a higher core CPU, and it's not necessarily RAM is going to make your computer faster. You're just going to be able to do more things at once, technically speaking, yeah?
Correct. So the RAM, the random access memory, is literally providing your speed during the action, where the CPU is providing the speed for all the actions.
Okay, there we go.
Is that better? Is that a little clearer?
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I kind of understood that without understanding it, if that makes sense. Like, I knew that you don't necessarily need more RAM to make stuff faster. You need a better CPU, as that, you know, makes everything faster, but I wasn't entirely sure why that was. And so you saying that just kind of helped me to understand that more.
Yeah, but it's pretty much sharing the workload. If you think about it, if you got four people with book bags, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got four people with book bags, you can carry more load. If I put eight people with those same four book bags, you know, it carries double the load. But now CPUs is one person with two book bags.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so
it's different.
Yeah. And then not to mention, I mean, like, if we're being honest, the Ryzen series is just becoming incredibly, like,
they're solid. Just smashing, they're so Intel. Good. Intel, yeah, is in a bad place. I hope they can recover, but I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel for them, unfortunately.
And so, like, I'll tell you my build and just tell me how you think about it. You know, I built this back in February of last year, so it's coming on 2 years, and it's still freaking kicking it, dude. The only thing I want is a better graphics card, because my graphics card just doesn't do very well. But I have a Ryzen 7 2700X. I got, what is it? I can't remember the motherboard, but I think it's like a 540?
The 550s or the 540, one of those.
Yeah, I think,
know which ones.
I think it's 540. I could be wrong on that. But then I have a 2060 in there. I got 16 gigs of RAM, and then I freaking need it. I have a one of those Samsung. See, like, when it comes to technicalities, I'm not very smart with that. But I have some SSD that was on sale from Samsung that, like, everyone used before the whole new NVMe.
The Samsung Evo.
The Evo. Yeah, I have one of those coming because the Newegg had a sale, and I was like, I do need a new hard drive. I have two hard drives that I've had for freaking goodness. They're 1 terabyte each, and I've had them for 5+ years now, and they're still killing it. You know, they're kind of just like my slaves, if you will. Like, they just take everything. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. They just take all the crap. And then I got some sort of really crappy SSD, but, you know, it works, and I had good reviews that, you know, runs my Windows and stuff. And then I have another SSD that runs all my games and whatnot.
That's perfect, man. Yeah, you got way more than I do. I have two SSDs. I have an M.2 on there, a 1 terabyte, and then a 240, and that's it.
I wish I had M.2. That'd be so nice. But dang, I mean, like, the only thing I wish I could get would be a 3070, so then I can really future-proof it. But I'm not sure if my CPU would bottleneck it. I'm not smart, honestly, when it comes to that. But
so right now you're at a perfect point. I actually wouldn't do an upgrade on your
case. Really?
The only upgrade that I would do is a full system, right? Because you're only going to get anywhere from 15 to maybe 20% by upgrading that card from a 2060 to, I mean, you'll get more space, like more RAM, but you're not going to get any, much more performance.
That's interesting, because I'm just curious if, like, the card is just, maybe it just sucks or something like that, because there's some games that perform so freaking well and then others that just chug. So I'm not sure really what's going on. I guess I'd have to sit and, like, diagnose it a little bit more. But
so do you use any type of, like, twitching? Do you do any type of anything like that?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I do stream from time to time. You know, it's more of a thing that I kind of try to, I used to be super into it and the card ran super well and everything. And now that I've been kind of doing it on the side just a little bit more, because, you know, this podcast takes precedence right now because of how much, you know, emphasis I'm trying to put onto that. And then, you know, my work schedule and everything, I don't stream as much. But when I do, I really see a huge drop in performance. And I try to encode through the, I think it's the CPU, because if I try and encode through the, so the 2060s, when the 20 series came out, they have a specific chip that's supposed to be used for encoding. But whenever I use that, I feel like it just doesn't do it. Like, it can't do what it's supposed to do for some reason.
It's probably the motherboard that has some type of lockdown or needs an update. Because I know what you're talking about. I know specifically that chipset that you're saying is just it only happens with the NVIDIA. NVIDIA has that controller and the AMD cards don't. So I'll give you an example, the 3080. The 3800 XT, that's one of those that didn't have it, and the NVIDIA 2600s do. So when they came out with that in the 888 titles, the NVIDIA chipset had the jump over the AMD at that moment. But now AMD corrected that and addressed it in the new card. That's why it's so much better. But another thing you could do is stream the same game, but use a borderless window. Instead of full screening it, if you use a borderless window when you're playing the game, it uses the graphics card over the CPU.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
It's a little trick. So just whatever game you're struggling on, you're going to play it the same. But instead of full screening your stream, just leave it on borderless and watch the difference. You tell me what you saw.
And then you want me to try it with that specific chip in the card is what you're saying.
No. So you should always be trying to run your encoding off the GPU. You want to take anything away from the CPU as you can. So, but by using the borderless window, you're not using your CPU. What you're doing is you're bypassing it and using your GPU to provide that speed.
Okay.
It's a quick little trick. So yeah. Try that out. See if it helps.
I'll try it out. Because here's the thing. I've tried so many different things and I feel like none of them just work well. So that's why I thought that maybe it was my card, because my card just isn't able to keep up with the demand. But
no, it's the card. I think it's probably your MOBO restricting it.
And then is there any fix to that? Or do I just literally have to get like a new MOBO?
No, you can go on to the drivers page of your motherboard. So like, give you an example, mine's is Asus Strix. So I would go to the Asus Strix website, go to the downloads page, and they should have an updated drivers for that. So if you're having issues for like 2060, I would look it up and they probably will have the driver you need to download. Mm. You just pop it, but always get it directly from the vendor. Don't get it from anywhere else.
Gotcha. Oh, I'll have to look into that. Oh, I got to open up a tab right now.
Because, man.
Yeah, dude, thank you. I mean, like, I never, like I said, I'm somewhat knowledgeable. But when it comes to, like, the technical stuff and all the numbers and crap, I'm like, what? But
yeah, that's what I've been grinding on, man. I've been grinding on that because I've built a little over 40 PCs this year. It was a blessing in disguise. Good little side hustle I started, and it's really good, man.
If you don't mind me asking, I'll ask you this, and then I'll ask you one more question. We'll kind of wrap things up. Do you go to like a specific site or something to learn it, or do you literally just like sit down and look at all the different things and start to understand the terminologies?
So the best thing I could say, the best way for you to improve in understanding hardware is by using hardware, unfortunately.
Okay.
So because I build, the more I challenge myself all the time, sometimes I'll get builds of that I'll have no experience touching or no, and I force myself run through the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because everything is the same. It's just some cases are a little bit more difficult than the others. Now with the unicorn vomit era, mm-hmm. we have a lot of struggling with the RGB hubs and making sure that your connections are good or your motherboard has enough RGB headers, because some of them only have one. Mm-hmm. Some of them have two. Knowing if your motherboard supports it, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen many of people fry out. I've been guilty of it too. I've burnt out plenty of RGB fans, and a couple of power supplies. So it's the learning curve. But that's what I love, and I think the best thing you could do is learn the hardware, understand how it functions. If you don't ask the question, just look at it and just tackle it. Go, okay, this is my problem. What do I need to find out?
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I'll have to start doing that then. Man, thank you for telling me all about this stuff. I wasn't expecting to go down this, but that's really cool. I feel like I learned, even in our short 5 little minutes about this, I feel like I learned a lot.
Yeah, man, that's what I try to bring value, man. However I can bring value to someone, if they can learn one piece of advice, because I know a lot, man. And that's why I'm just trying to be an open book, nice. Kind of let people in.
Yeah. Speaking of advice, this is the last question I love to ask people. So I asked this from every single person that comes on this show. And this can be about literally anything. It doesn't have to be about something that we talked about. You know, it could be about whatever it is, you know, but what would be one piece of advice or like a saying or something like that, that you've like held on to or you feel like is very valuable that people need to hear?
I think there's a lot that people need to hear. I would first say, I'm sorry. let people hear it. And I think that the second part I would say is just, for sure, we have to try. We have to try to be more resilient in our actions so our community can grow, because I'm seeing it time to time again where I feel like, you know, parents are falling to the wayside. Maybe they are just burnt out. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are hitting that burnout stage, and no, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. Reach out to someone. You're not alone in this. And I think people need to really hear that and understand that we're going to get through it. And yeah. We got to be positive. If we keep thinking on the negative or dwelling on all the poop, we ain't moving nowhere. And I really appreciate your time on this podcast and just communicating with me and however else I can help you guys, man. Yeah. Just let us know.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick, do you want to shout out anything that you're doing?
Right now, yeah. I the only thing I will shout out is just my podcast, Sardino's True Talk. You could reach me over on Facebook. I'm on Twitch under the Dino. I have a YouTube page under my full name, my government name, Jamil Sardino, Yamil. And Charlie Echo, Delta Echo, November Oscar. Just go reach out to me any way you like. Spotify support. We don't ask for any donations. I do a lot of work trying to help during hurricane relief and any of those, because it's near and dear to me, and I actually have to work on the towers in that area. So, like for example, Louisiana just recently. So we definitely have to pull together and know that we're all here to help. And however we can help, just reach out to me, man. If you need a piece of advice, you just need to talk, you need to yell at somebody, I'm that person for you.
Awesome. I'll be sure to reach out if I have anything. Go ahead when we're done and send me an email with the links and stuff they want me to post in the notes. So then when this goes live, it's all there so people can see that.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. No problem, man. And I appreciate your time, Danny.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate you too. Thank you for opening up so much about, you know, the military and everything. I love talking about that stuff because I feel like it's very valuable for people to hear. And then also thank you for doing some computer diagnosis with me. That was really cool.
Hey man, that's what I'm for, man. I'm for. So yeah, and I'm just very grateful. I want you to understand how grateful I am for this opportunity, because I'm in for a ride. I'm getting ready to do an episode with Dr. King, Dr. John A. King, and it's a blessing in disguise. It's like I was meant to do this. I was meant to be on your podcast for a reason, and I was meant to meet you, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm very thankful that you were able to come on here. And I'll say this, if you need a guest or you want me to guest for whatever reason, shoot me an email and we'll figure something out. I'd be more than happy to offer my service since you were so grateful to come on mine. So
absolutely, man. However, awesome. Like I said, we will definitely do that. You just let me know what topics you like to talk about and we'll build around that, man.
Sounds good. Sweet. Well, thank you so much again for doing this. I really do appreciate you giving me, you know, an hour and 15 minutes of your time. I hope you have a great week, man. Keep being so positive. We need more positivity in this world.
Absolutely, man. I know.
Awesome. Well, sweet. Thanks. Like I said, have a great week, and send me an email with everything, and then we'll go from there.
Yes, sir. All right, man. Have a good one.
Yeah, pleasure. You too. Sorry about the ending right there. There was some weird audio thing that happened, but dude, thanks for being here, Jamil. Jamil. thanks for doing that and for being here and for your service. No BS, no crap. I really do appreciate you for serving and for being out there and keeping us safe, keeping me safe. I really do appreciate that. Good luck with everything in your endeavors, you know. I really do feel like this was a divine meeting, if I can say that without being weird. You know, it's cool to meet people like that. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Across the Pond. If you enjoyed this episode a lot, please check out some of my other episodes. I've had some great conversations with a ton of people on a variety of subjects. If you know of a friend or a family member, or even maybe that one person that's not really part of your family, but they are, like that uncle, and you think that they would like an episode, please share it with them. I want to thank Mark for the logo, and I want to thank Black Couch Label and Ollie H for the music. And I want to thank you, the listener, for giving this about an hour, hour and a half of your time. I really do appreciate it. I want to ask one more thing of you. If you can, on whatever platform you're listening on, please leave a rating. I have episodes that come out every Sunday and every other Thursday. Tune in next time for another awesome episode of Across the Pond.